cares about kids. It's just like in her heart, and my kid doesn't even have her anymore, and you still.
He's always in my heart, man.
I know.
I just love
so,
him.
So, and he, they had a little, they had a little click going where I would know, and he wouldn't tell me, and it was like,
First of all, I just want to say it's been so fun to be here with all of you this morning. I am a huge fan of moms supporting other moms, and so just being amongst you has been so energizing for me this morning. Are you okay if I'm, like, really chill and kind of laid back?
Yes.
That's the definition of our
group. Yes, which I was getting that vibe, and I was like, I think they're going to be okay. Today,
I thought you were going to sit on the floor.
No. If I sit on the floor, we all sit on the floor.
She's
my
cool.
Okay. So I, like Marianne said, I'm a high school counselor. This is my fourth year at Carmel High School. I was at Creekside for 7 years before that, and then Clay Middle School for 2 years before that. So I've kind of worked my way across the Carmel system. And I love kids. That's the whole reason that I am in this job. I've made it my life's work to lose sleep over other people's children. And I take that very seriously, and it's an honor to work with those kids every day. So today my conversation with you is not really Carmel High School specific or Carmel School specific. I want to talk to you about development. I want to talk to you about transitions. And of course, today I probably will talk in general terms. There are a lot of rabbit holes that I could go down talking about children with special needs or with different types of needs or those kinds of things. And today I'm probably just going to cover kind of general transition issues, but I know that kids with trauma or grief or those kinds of things sometimes have a different experience at all levels. So today I'll probably keep it light and fluffy just so that I don't ruin the mood of the group. But
we can handle it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And while I didn't bring a handout, I did bring a fun little activity for us to do together at the end of this. So I'll leave some time for questions as well, because I know most of you are in the thick of things right now with transitioning kids, and it's really stressful. I was talking to Janelle right here, right in front of me. The thing is, if you hear nothing else from me today, it is that transitions are typically scarier for parents than for kids. And so we are all in this together, legitimately, and you'll hear me say over and over that we have to lean on each other. We belong to each other. And it's so cool to see this community here. I live in the inner city, and so I'm part of a community there where moms support other moms. And it has always been difficult for me as a working mom, because a lot of cool things like this happen during the day. But for those moms who get to experience this during the day, they've always, like, collected me up and just made me a part of that group, too. So when you're thinking about the moms to invite, maybe people like me can take a day off of work or once in a while or something, you know.
You're welcome anytime.
I know.
That's
like,
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
I live in Carmel. I'll pick you up.
Yes. I live at 10th in Arlington. So. I live a juxtaposed life. I see the inner city, and my husband and I are really passionate about the inner city and serving refugees, which I know actually your church has partnered a lot with an organization that my husband's on the board for, Exodus. And this church is just, it means a lot to me, because I know you are also really heavily involved in Brookside, and that's all me, that's where I live,
yeah.
So it's fun to partner with you guys, and it's cool that moms, no matter where you are, no matter where you're situated, we're all in this together, you know, we're in the city, and for each other. So anyway, without further ado, we'll talk a little bit about transitions. I am very low tech. I have water and a notepad. My son, actually, when I was preparing this, he's like, "Are you writing in your journal, Mom?" Because I think I got like 50 pages of notes. And I was like, "No, I'm just talking about something that I'm really passionate about." And so he was like, "That's going to take a long time to say all that." I was like, "Oh, no, it's just a script. It's fine." So anyway, I was joking with Marianne when we were originally talking about me coming to talk to you all, because my kids are 10, 7, and 4. So I've been through one major transition, and that is kindergarten. However, I've been helping other people's kids for the last 13 years go through all these other transitions. And so I guess I'm technically an expert in the field, although I think we all would say that motherhood is the best educator. I'm now a much better counselor because I have my own children. I was so green and altruistic and idealistic beforehand. I was like, you know, if kids would come to me and talk about the things that happened at home, I'd be like, "Your parents must be horrible people." And now that I'm a mom, I'm like,
yep.
"Girl, boo, I would have spanked you." But I think that it has given me so much perspective and insight on what really happens in homes. And now I can provide support not only to the students, but also to the parents as well, which is a huge piece of transitioning. Okay. Before we get into this too deeply, can I just see from all of you what age levels your kids are at? So if you have an elementary school kid, raise your hand. Wow! Okay, how about middle schoolers? Okay, high schoolers? Or soon-to-be high schoolers?
Yeah. Oh, I'm not pregnant, though.
Can we get an amen?
Amen!
I didn't
think of you, I was like, oh, Christy got pregnant.
And then, do any of you have college-age kids or soon-to-be college-age kids? Excellent. And then how many of you have someone in several of those different developmental levels? Okay. So it's fun for me to see all the different things. That helps me anticipate your needs a little bit more today. I have a feeling that most of you have navigated the kindergarten transition with only a few tears, you know. Again, those kids, when they are going off to kindergarten, they have the hope of lunch and recess and nap time for some of them. They have all of these things, and they have each other. Whereas we, as the parents, sometimes feel like islands. We are navigating this by ourselves, and no matter how many meetings the schools have to help us acclimate, let's face it, those meetings are really for us, there's always this worry for us. We worry about the minutiae, the what if they get lost? Or what if they don't have lunch? What if they don't, you know, what if they don't know their letter sounds? What if they can't write their letters? Oh my gosh. And sometimes those things happen. They do happen. Sometimes kids have potty accidents at school. Our worst fears are realized and actualized. But you know what? We make it through every day, just one day at a time. And we just face those burdens and obstacles as they come. So I think that this is going to be a recurring theme throughout my conversation with you today, is that the things, we worry about the little things. And the kids don't worry about that stuff as much. In fact, I would say the thing that kids really worry about are, am I going to have enough time for lunch? Will I have a friend? Will anyone want to sit with me at lunch? What do my teachers mean? Those kinds of things. And while those things have absolutely nothing to do with academics, they have everything to do with academics at the same time. Because kids who are not okay can't learn. They can't focus. They can't stay engaged. And so I think that's why we worry about those things, because we know that we want them, the whole point of them going to school is to learn and to be engaged. The things that happen in elementary that always amaze me are, I have a first grader and a fourth grader, and my first grader is so sweet and innocent, and my fourth grader is so disgusting and smelly. And I'm like about to go broke trying to use essential oils, because if he takes off one shoe, it clears out our entire house. And so the changes that happen in that K-5 developmental span are vast. I have a lot still to learn as well. I think things are only going to get smellier from here on out. But I know. And then do you guys all feel the same mom guilt, like, what if it has aluminum in it? Oh my gosh, I have to give them all the natural stuff. Okay, whatever. Like,
are we starting this so young?
Yeah.
Oh my word. Anyway, that'll be for another talk.
If I buy it, we'll wait and put it on.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because that's another habit, just like brushing your teeth, that you have to remember to do. Mm-hmm. Yep. So in this space, I want you to know that you are all the experts on your child, and that your intuition is probably the strongest gift that you've been given. So there are times where you have to trust a mother's intuition. And most of these things are probably just normal developmental stages that we go through. But if your gut ever tells you that something's not right or something's up, follow your gut and make sure that you follow up on that. So when we talk about kids in elementary school, I think when my first son was going off to kindergarten, I was like, yes, this is the best and worst day of my life.
Yes.
Because my child, who is now 5, well, he's 10 now, but he can still act like a little Neanderthal at times. It's amazing how fast they can still switch in that moment to become like a toddler. And they make it to school, and they act great at school, and then they come home, and they just fall apart for us. That's probably one of the things I hear from moms at every age. Like, oh my gosh, what is going on? So that's another theme throughout motherhood, that we always kind of get the worst of our kids. But don't despair over that. I got ahead of myself a little bit in my notes, my copious notes. Wow, really far ahead of myself. Oh, yeah. So, how do we empower our little humans to become autonomous, which means independent, and not codependent on us? How do we empower them to have a good school transition? This will be a theme that I talk about throughout today. They have to be okay at school so that they can learn. And so being okay means they have to transition well into the building. They have to be okay finding their way around. They have to know when their lunch is. They have to be able to kind of anticipate all those transitions. They have to know how to make friends, or how at least to be courteous to other people so that they can have friends. And so I feel like us as moms, we have so many hats that we have to wear. We have to be the doctor. We have to be the school liaison. We have to be the lunch person, the coach, the snack provider, the minivan driver, whatever. But we have to set guidelines and limitations, and we have to be consistent with those. I think I felt, especially early on in motherhood, that it was really hard to find parenting strategies that worked with my little people because I wasn't being consistent. So when you set guidelines for your kids, you always kind of have to have the end in mind, so you plan backwards. And so when you are thinking about, like, how do I want my child to act when they are 18, that actually starts from a very early age when they are getting ready to go into elementary school. Do I want them to be kind? What are some of the values that my family has that I want them to be thinking about later on in life? And that kind of indoctrination starts early and often. And it's beautiful that you are all in a safe church community where you probably share a lot of the same values and core hopes and dreams and aspirations for your child to follow Jesus and to be caring citizens and all of those things. But it's amazing to me how much our kids learn from other kids at school that we did not necessarily want them to learn. Even things like Santa Claus and Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. There are a lot of songs my kids come home singing that I think, I didn't teach you that. And some of that we can't stop. But how do we respond to those things when they come into our homes? I think it's important to be really black and white. And so one thing that I found helpful in our home is to say things like that are black and white and concrete, because when they're at the K through 5 development span, they're still very much black and white thinkers developmentally. So saying things like, in our family, we value all humans, and so that is the reason why we speak kindly to everyone, no matter if they look different than us, or if they smell different than us, or if they come from different religions, or different whatever. And so then that can be a foundation that we build everything on. When they come home and say, Mom, this kid called me whatever, my response can be then, well, we value all humans, so how did you respond to that, you know? And there are so many teachable moments. I loved what you shared about David. Where's our devotional leader? Because honestly, I think sometimes as Christians, we hope that we become sanctified or refined and that we're done. Yeah. But every day, it's like this. And that's why we start our journals with, I promise that this time I'm going to do this. But that our kids have to learn early and often that we are going to make mistakes, and it's all about how you approach those mistakes. And better for them to make those mistakes under our roofs when they have our loving care and guidance than when they're out in the big world. So having a value system that's clear. Some people have even gone so far as to make those really cool wooden signs that are like our family mission statement. And I'm like, wow, that takes a lot of organization, and I just don't have that right now. But you know, to have family values that are simple and clear so that your black and white thinkers know exactly why we act a certain way in our family is really important. You have to be concrete and succinct. Sometimes parents get real wordy, especially me. And so we have to make sure that they understand, because in those moments, sometimes there will be discipline moments where you just have to be able to say, that is a rule break for our family, and that's it. You know, like, then you can process it later, but there are things that your kids have to know are just essential for your family, the way that you operate as a family. Okay, so some things that you can do to help your child with the transition into elementary, obviously model appropriate behavior. I think a lot of times we see kids act a certain way, and a lot of educators, especially those who don't have their own children, are like, what are those parents doing at home? And I'm like, honey, the apple does not fall from the tree, okay? It does fall from the tree, but I did not teach my kid half the things that they do. They are hardwired in a certain way. So we always have to model that appropriate behavior, and we really have to model the appropriate behavior in the hard moments. You know, like when, if you especially have more than one child, if there's fighting going on, you have to be able to say, if you can't be respectful to your brother, then we're going to have to take just a break from each other until we can come back and resolve this peacefully. And that can start even when they're toddlers. Just showing them that, like, when there's conflict, it's okay to have conflict. It's okay to feel frustrated. Validate those feelings. It is okay to be frustrated, but it is not okay to hurt someone else when you are frustrated. And just start those mantras with them so that they kind of, that's their filter when they are facing any kind of situation. One thing that I've been really struck by is the need for direct instruction in certain things. Kids are not innately wired with habits or manners or anything else, which I was that mom that was always like, oh, my kids will never fill in the blank. And they prove me wrong every day. So there are some things, though, that, like, so ADHD runs in my family. I have an ADHD wired brain. And so my son, my middle son, actually also does as well. And for a lot of people, kids with ADHD are very frustrating, including educators and moms, okay? And so what we have to do is train them in things like self-discipline and self-control. We need to use that verbiage, that language. Like, you have to keep control of your own self. You're the only one that can control you. I can't control your behavior. And that's the truth. You can try to control them with punishment, with threats, with whatever, but if we are really truly thinking ahead in our parenting, threats aren't, you just have to keep making bigger threats or bigger punishments or whatever as they get older. And so in that moment, you have to be like, wait a second, a threat isn't going to help. Me taking away your gummy bears or whatever, you know, like they say natural consequences are best, but sometimes there isn't a natural consequence. Like if you hit your sister, I don't know what the natural consequence is of that other than the relationship being burdened, but that doesn't seem like really powerful in that moment. So it's important that we teach them what it looks like to control our bodies, teach them specific strategies so that when they're at school, they know if they're supposed to be seated, that, you know, this is how you sit appropriately. They need to actually be told those things. A lot of times I think we just feel like, oh, they should know that, they should get it. They don't pick up on cues that fast, guys. And it was funny when they asked you if it was another boy, and you're like, I hope not. I have two boys and a girl. And I was like, I have to be okay in my heart with having a third boy before I can have another child. And I got a girl, thanks to that app on my phone. but, like, the boys especially, I was an only child to a single mom, so I didn't grow up with any boys in my house. And for me to have boys, I'm like, I don't even know what is going on right now. So much wrestling and fighting and, like, talking about poops and butts, and I'm like, what is going on? I never talked about these things, so it's always shocking to me. Anyway, so make sure that you talk to them about self-discipline, self-control, what that looks like, and how that works in your family. And I do think even kids who have ADHD brains, which it's becoming more and more prevalent, and especially with environmental factors, you know, they talk about the neuroplasticity and those kinds of things. If we teach kids early about controlling their bodies and being self-controlled, I think that they can overcome. They have better coping strategies to overcome some of those natural impulses. Because, you know, schools will talk to you pretty quickly if there are issues, like, hey, we need some medication up in here. Yeah. And while medication has changed my own life, I don't know that putting a 7-year-old who is underweight and kind of scrawny on medicines is helpful that early. So, you know, it's like if we can teach them some of those things early and often, get those mantras going in their mind, like, is this the right thing to do right now? Okay. You know, we teach them how to control their minds, to be in control of their bodies. This is going to sound silly probably, but please spend uninterrupted time with your kids. Play games with them. Make hobbies and habits and rituals and traditions that only you guys share, because I promise you, if you are thinking to the future, the kids in the future are going to want to hang out with the family that plays together. Because, you know, I can't tell you how many high schoolers will be like, my parents don't ever, I don't want to talk to them. They don't like me. They don't like to be around me. And they feel that. And so even if it's not true, which I'm like, your parents like you, okay? But the families that play together, not only are they the magnets for all the other kids, but they, like, those kids tend to stay out of trouble. I would just say start putting money aside now for snacks. Because if you're the house that everybody's coming to, they're going to eat you out of house and home. So start a little savings account on the side right now for that. But uninterrupted time seems so difficult this day and age, especially with phones and tablets and this and that and the other thing. But just have a media-free hour where you just play board games or whatever. And, I mean, I taught my 2-year-old how to play a couple of different things, whether it's a matching game. So you can do all kinds of different activities that are fun for the whole family. And again, it sounds silly, but it is really a critical piece of establishing what you want in the future. I already talked about the good and bad things that kids learn in a classroom. When they come home singing things like Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, sometimes you can't curtail that. I'm always like, what are these parents saying to you, or what are they letting you watch? But I think that's a part of being in community, is that we deal with the other things that are in our communities that we maybe don't like. And maybe there are things that about us that they don't like either. But if we truly embrace community, then we don't judge those kids and say, you're not allowed to hang out with that person. We say, what's going on with that family? Let's like get to know them better. And there are some people maybe you do need to avoid. I get that. But like, I hear a lot of parents that say, that child's a bad influence. We don't want our kid hanging around with that person. And maybe you don't want your child to be with them one-on-one. Invite them over. See what happens. Maybe that person needs a little bit of extra love, or they maybe need a good mentoring family. Maybe there's a lot of stress or things like that. And so before you write anyone off, I would say, see if you can embrace them as part of your community first. Okay, and this is my final thing about elementary. My son, my 10-year-old, has decided I am the meanest mom in the world because I have not allowed him to have a phone.
Oh, me too.
And I have been influenced by a body of research that suggests that you should wait until kids are either in 8th grade or 15 years old, somewhere in there, before you give them a phone. And so my son is the only one in his grade, mm-hmm. in his school, in the city, and in the whole universe. So you may want to just scratch all the notes you've taken already and just disregard everything I've said, because I am obviously not a good mom. But, mamas, I just want to say that there are way too many things that can't be unseen or unheard. And I think you can probably infer what I'm talking about, but anything from like first-person violent shooter games to pornography, to just stupid YouTube videos that are pointless and a waste of time. And if you've already given your kid a phone, I'm not judging you. You deal with that in the way that you need to so that you can be forward thinking. But the new bodies of evidence are kind of indicating that their brains just aren't ready for it. And starting in 6th grade, when I was a middle school counselor for 9 years, I saw some of the scariest things happen on social media and on phones and with hidden like apps that were secret apps that like would, it looked like a calculator, but it would hide photos and things like that.
Sexting.
So, yes,
sexting.
Thank you. I'll just come right out and say it. And so that, I feel like at any point in time, we can succumb to that and give them the phone, but once you give it to them, you can never go back. So there's no point in hurrying into that. Plus it's like 50 extra bucks a month. So, you know, just save your money and put it for that snack fund for later. Again, I am not judging anyone. If you've already given your kids a phone, or some kids legitimately need a phone before they're 15 or in the 8th grade, that's fine. But just I'm always trying to stay on top of the literature and education, and I think that is kind of where we're heading. We can't necessarily make that recommendation as a school, but I'm not talking to you from a school perspective today. I'm talking to you mom to mom. Okay.
Just right there, though, talk about the other piece, which is the social piece,
yeah.
where they're all on the group chats.
I sure
and
can.
Anonymous, yeah. And then I would assume you'd see repercussions in
yes.
school from
you know,
what happened on the group chat and all of that.
I have strong opinions about group chats and sleepovers, because I don't think anything good ever happens at either. Well, sleepovers, of course, when I'm, like, middle school and high school, but when the kids feel like their entire social network lives inside that phone, mm-hmm. which we as parents get. I mean, my friends all live inside my phone. If I didn't have my phone, I'd be like, but I am responsible enough to use it appropriately. If I could tell you how many times in the past, today is what, Thursday, in 3 school days, if I could tell you how many group chats made someone distraught or hurt other people or said unkind things, it is just kind of the nature of the beast. Now, sometimes there are group chats for sporting events or those kinds of things, and kids can use it appropriately, but I would say that's the minority, not the majority. And then what we're also seeing, Marianne and I were just chatting, there has been a drastic increase in anxiety. And while a lot of that is academic, I would say even more of it is social media based. FOMO, fear of missing out, is a real thing. Kids see what other people are doing on social media. They feel left out. They feel like they aren't good enough. They feel like they don't have friends. And I feel like what they don't know won't hurt them. Now, the thing is, when they don't have their own phone and everybody else around them does, they have access to phones. They have access to all of that stuff, which I'm still learning how to navigate, to be honest. Because there's always going to be parents that let their kids have things before I let my kids, or vice versa. We just create difficulties sometimes. But when we talk about anxiety, and I mean, when I was a middle school counselor, my last year as a middle school counselor, I think we had at least 10 kids who were hospitalized in a stress center setting just because they were having bad thoughts. And so if you're telling me that there is something that is in the universe right now that's creating more stress, I'm going to keep my kids from that as long as I can. And so if I know for sure that social media is one of those kind of precipitators of stress, I'm going to protect them from it, just like I would protect them from not having a gun in my home. You know, it's like simple strategies that we can use to try to keep our kids safe. And I'm sorry if I'm getting very opinionated or personal, but I think I've just seen too many things to take any chances or risks. Especially that we just get one shot to raise these kiddos, you know, so it's like I'd rather start too strict and loosen up than to start too loose and try to tighten up the reins later on. Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
So our oldest is an eighth grader at Clay, and I saw you at the coffee night a few weeks ago. Sometime ago.
Yeah, in the last year.
Yeah. he just got a phone this year.
Yeah.
Eighth. He's just starting, it's the end of the school year, so I feel like we made it pretty scout-free, but he's starting to ask a little bit about social media, and we are hard-nosed on that, but because you're right, they're the only kids that don't have phones in the universe, they're the only kids that don't have social media, they're the only kids that don't do this and this,
yep.
But what do you think, like how often does it happen that things are said about kids that aren't on social media,
right?
Like how often, because I know cyberbullying is real.
Yes,
I know that there is group chats that are
malicious,
toxic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if my son's not on social media, I read this article, it's a whole different thing. I read this article about, like, even 10 years ago, if a kid tripped in the lunchroom.
Oh, yeah. I love the article. That was good.
And fell and spilled his food. The kids that were right there saw it.
Yep.
And the kid who thought it was funny told his friend after lunch, and it came across kind of mean, and then it kind of shut down from there. Now, kids have phones. Probably 10 people recorded it.
Yep.
It's all over. It's being passed around school. And what should have been a minor, oh, I slipped and dropped my tray of food and had to change my clothes, turns into the whole school knows, and everyone's laughing at him, but he didn't know. And so just, like, because my eighth grader is very sensitive,
mm-hmm.
but he's also very unaware. So,
bless him.
And so, like, my question is, like, how often do you think it happens that things are said about students,
mm-hmm.
when they're completely unaware and judgments are being placed on them that are inaccurate,
and
they
don't
can't
even know what's going on.
They don't know what's going
on.
They can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
Their friends can't come to their defense. How often does that happen? Is that something we should talk to him about? Because we don't want to create an issue where there isn't one. You know what I mean?
Yep. I would say I'm hearing more and more kids whose parents won't let them have social media.
Mm-hmm.
And there are actually laws about social media. Most programs you have to be 13 or 14 in order to actually have an account. So a lot of kids who are younger than that have created fictitious accounts or illegal accounts.
Anyone
can do that, right? I'm too old for Snapchat, but no, I'm just kidding. But I would say that there is probably a fair amount of that happens. Oh, your parents don't let you have social media or whatever.
Yeah.
most of the kids that are getting talked about are oblivious to it, which
right.
I consider a gift to them. And
I figure like,
kids,
if they're oblivious, then it probably dies down because you're not
blessing.
Getting a reaction.
That's right. There's
yeah.
no
yeah.
response.
Yeah.
But sometimes
there
kids will be like...
defending yourself on social media?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
To.
That's
yeah.
right.
True.
Even as adults,
that's
if we try to defend our position,
true.
It's like people just blow you up, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
so what I would say is that there's always the next big thing that's just going to trump that. So your kid
okay.
might be in the limelight for a minute, but then there's going to be something else that everyone just moves
right.
away from it. So
that's
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Things like that.
We're having high school conversations. You know, like they just created a group chat because
yeah.
he's doing marching band.
Yeah.
And they created a group chat with all the kids in his section.
Yep.
Like, there's like 30 kids in here. I don't
right.
know if I'm okay with this.
Right. And some of them are seniors and some of them are juniors and some of them
they're
yeah.
all. It's, yeah.
Right.
And so I'm like, I don't know if this is really something. And they're like, but this is what we do. This is how we communicate. And I was like, yeah, but I don't really know if you're going to be the only melophone that's not in the group chat. I don't know. So it's just a lot
that is really hard
to navigate.
Especially with a school the size of ours,
yeah.
we have to use technology a lot to
yeah.
send remind or whatever. But I would say in that situation, just say, is it okay if I'm the one that gets the group text until we're comfortable
right.
with it or whatever? Can I also be on
I'm
there?
Gonna be the mom on there with you.
Yeah.
This is finished, mom. Watch your language.
Yeah.
I'm a group mom. Yeah. Those are the things, though, that
you
I'm still learning to navigate.
You could just 13-year-old account.
That's right.
And
true.
Then you could reprimand them in silence. Oh, that wasn't very nice.
Just
a girl. Say you're a mom, and then they'll start saying, my peer said it wasn't nice.
No, this is that's a good conversation. So now we're gonna get to middle school. So middle school, the changes that happen in a kid's body in elementary ain't got nothing on what's about to happen in middle school. I was always amazed by the 6th graders who looked like they were still 8 years old and wanted hugs,
yes.
and the 8th graders who were like 6'4" and had full beards.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is a huge span and. Developmentally, socially, emotionally, sexually, everything in middle school is just a huge conglomeration. And kids go from having, let's say, 500 to 700 kids in their elementary to 500 to 700 kids their age in one grade, you know? So it is a big shift in a lot of things. And what I find in many schools, they have several elementaries and then a couple middle schools and then one high school or two high schools. And so it feels disjointed, like the schools don't always align vertically. So the middle school might not know all the things that the elementary schools were doing, and they were all doing it a little differently. So for some parents, that can be frustrating. It feels like you have to relearn an entire new culture. But in some ways, I think that that is okay. It's maybe actually good, just because you're talking about becoming a whole new member of a different community. And I think it's good to get a fresh start, kind of just like a, make a fresh break. But for kids, that's a lot to navigate. They go from having one teacher for most of the day with like one special a day to having a huge locker with an impossible combination that requires all this twisting and turning. They have 7 to 8 teachers. Some kids, in Carmel, we have 4 periods a day in our middle schools, and then we have days that we rotate. But some kids have 7 or 8 periods a day. That's a ton of transitions even within that day. Learning 7 or 8 new sets of expectations, rules in the classroom. And then, I don't know if you've ever been to a middle school lunch, but their options are endless.
Yeah.
Okay, so they go from having a very prescribed lunch menu to having all these a la carte things and different waters and different, you know, like... So then you're like, why are we spending $50 a day on lunch? Holy cow. But there's all kinds of new things for them to navigate. So when I was a middle school counselor, I was convinced that the transition from 5th to 6th was by far the hardest one for any kid to make. Because not only what I just said with the lockers and the teachers, but also the academic rigor just completely changes. They go to more of a sit and get model where you have to listen to a lecture, take notes. You have to use these executive skills that you really haven't had to use before. They go from having, you know, like a math worksheet for homework at night to having reading and writing and like nonfiction text reading and all kinds of other things. And so I remember a lot of tears from 6th graders and their parents just because that is a really difficult transition academically, socially, emotionally, physically. I just get really far ahead of myself.
So what do you recommend then during the transition? From 5th to 6th.
From 5th to 6th.
From elementary to the next
middle
yep.
school.
And in some districts that they have like an intermediate school and a middle school,
mm-hmm.
so then they have to navigate an extra transition. And in middle school, you also, there's a big transition for the parents as well, because you're not invited into the building as much. There aren't as many volunteer opportunities. And it's just plain not cool for middle schoolers to eat lunch with their parents. Whereas, like, when you're in elementary and you eat with your parents, it's the coolest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, first and foremost, it's important for us to become really good interviewers of our kids. Because you went from having all these people in the building, the custodians, the lunch people, the teachers, the principal, the counselor, whomever, that were all kind of in your corner, on your part of your tribe, to having fewer connections as adults in the school. So I would say you have to become a better interviewer of your child. Don't ask yes or no questions. Did you have a good day at school? Did you have fun today at school? You know, those are questions that you're going to get zero answers from. And a lot of parents are like, I can't get them to tell me anything. And I'm like, well, what do you ask? And so it's all about the questions that you ask. So you can probably anticipate that those first 2 to 3 weeks are going to be pretty stressful. And kids try to hold it together again all day at school so no one thinks that they're weird. But then they come home and they're like, my teacher's so mean. And so for us as parents, the main thing is to not have parental freakouts. Okay, so when kids come home, they tell you a story. My teacher yelled at me in front of the whole class today. That may be true, or that might be partially true, or there might be some truth in that. But don't freak out on them. No matter what they come home and tell you, so-and-so kissed a boy in the bathroom. You stay calm, and then you go call your best friend in the closet and freak out on them. But don't freak out on your kids. Parental freakouts are the reasons kids don't talk to their parents. Because
even
they don't...
too happy. You can't even be too happy. You have to show no emotion.
That's right. Parental freakouts, good or bad.
Not even emotion. Or you're not listening.
That's right. You're like, master the mom face.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the biggest things I can recommend to any parent is to not freak out. If your kid has a rough day, soothe them and try to problem solve what the next options are or what the next things that you have to do or they have to do. Encourage them to ask questions. So many kids are afraid to ask questions in class because they don't want to look stupid or they don't want to sound stupid. They can ask questions privately. They can come to class a few minutes earlier, come a few minutes or stay a few minutes late. But don't let them give into that peer pressure of not being able to ask questions. They get lost in the hallway in their first week of school. Encourage them to ask questions. Kids' self-advocacy is something that they need to learn so early because it does not come to them innately. They don't know how to fend for themselves unless it's like primal needs, like I have to go to the bathroom, then they'll ask, but that's because they don't want to pee in their pants in front of their peers, right? So not understanding math is something that they can struggle with privately, but you don't want them to. So don't freak out on them, and this is another theme you're going to see in high school as well. Because if you want your kids to talk to you, you have to foster open and honest communication. And just ask questions like, tell me more about that. That sounds really hard. Validate those feelings. Because for a tween, their perception is their reality. Even if it sounds completely asinine to you, like, there is no way that happened today. You're like, that must have been really scary for you. Tell me more about that. And then you can try to help them retrain some of their thinking about the situation. To maybe for the next time if they have to face that to be more calm or rational about it. But their brains are not fully developed, so their perception is their reality. And we as parents have to kind of foster that. I can't tell you how many parents, like, they'll hear a story from their kid. Maybe they'll get it over a text. Let's say, my daughter's in the bathroom right now. She just texted me. She's having this. Teacher just yelled at her. The parent just shows up, and I'm like, well, we probably need to look into this a little bit more. And 9 times out of 10, there is truth to the situation that we could mediate. But it wasn't quite maybe as hyperbolic as the kid thought it was or whatever. So, again, when I was first a counselor, I said, your parents must be so mean! But now that I'm a little bit more seasoned, I know to stop and kind of filter through what's true here, what's not true. And we are mama bears. I mean, that's kind of... we spend our whole lives trying to protect these kids. So if our kids tell us that something happened like that, of course we want, that's our first instinct is protect them. But parental freakouts are kind of your arch nemesis. Because then as you get into high school, if your kids' friends know that you are a freaker outer, they're going to be like, don't tell your mom, because then she's going to call my mom, and then, you know, whatever. So,
and also the lecture, they don't like the lectures. So you have
right.
to sneak it in as a, I wonder if.
Right. honestly, the language we use is
right.
paramount.
Yeah.
Because.
Do you think it's possible? I mean, trust me, I have been, thank
yes.
you, Matthew, for changing my life.
Yes. yes. Because middle school is the time where, I'm sorry, but none of you know anything. I see you over there with your Harvard MBA, and I see you over there, the CEO of Apple, but your credentials just aren't enough. You unfortunately don't know anything.
Okay.
So that's why we wonder. Yeah. So that, wow. And validation goes, it's true. Validation goes a long way with any human.
Ask
like
questions
wow.
and make people think.
That sounds unlike anything I've ever heard before in my life. Maybe you could tell me more details. What did his face look like when you said that? So, and also at the beginning of any transition, I encourage families to get into their new building as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because when your kids know the lay of the land, those directional abilities give them so much courage and confidence. So, especially when you're on your way to middle school and you know they've got all these new classes and a huge place to navigate, get in that building as much as you can. Most schools will open up for like a whole week before school starts. They'll give you the kids' schedule. I mean, I have some parents that are in there like all day for hours, just walk in the schedule, walk in, walk in, walk in.
Yes.
Find visual landmarks. Find things that you're like, okay, when you see this specific railing, turn left. When you see this art case, turn right. When you see these signs up here, this is how you know. If you're in Carmel High School, it's like, here's the radio station. Good luck finding everything else. Okay,
yeah.
In the center of our building. So you have to find visual landmarks. That helps kids build confidence. Get combination locks in the summer before they start middle school, just so that they can practice that kind of rhythm. Right, left, right, you know, pass it once, blah, blah, blah. Those are just the little things that you can do to help kids with the transition. If they have those kind of minute details figured out, then the academic stuff will come a little bit more easily because they won't be constantly wondering, like, where do I go next? What's my next class? And honestly, I worked in two middle schools, and our transition program is really awesome. The teachers spend the first 2 weeks just, like, taking them on treasure hunts or making it fun, scavenger hunts. Here's how you find these people. Here's how you sign up to see your counselor. Here's how you do this and that. And really, passing periods, they're pretty lenient. At Carmel High School, we give kids 10-minute passing periods, but, like, if they're 5 or 10 minutes late to their classes the first 2 weeks, there's no penalty. These are kids. We're dealing with humans. And I think at the heart of every educator, we know that we're dealing with imperfect people who need some grace. So, anyway.
I still have dreams that I don't know what my next class is.
Seriously? And that I'm not wearing pants.
Yes.
And I don't wear my glasses.
Oh my
so many problems.
I didn't have a last
class.
Yes,
sure.
You sort of mentioned that the school where you worked at is it block scheduling?
Yeah.
Is that what you call it? Do you think that that's really helpful for
kids? I do.
Yeah,
just because having 8 transitions in one day is too much. Especially if you're trying, we're demanding a lot of executive skills from kids. Those are things like time management, prioritizing, organization, task initiation. If they have 8 things to remember every single day, that's just too much. And the teachers really can't cover the content deeply. So I'd say fewer transitions is always going to be easier on a kid.
Is there any downside to it with, like, increased length of instructional time during that? Like,
oh, yeah.
The focus during it?
For sure. But a lot of times, middle school educators are amazing because they understand that kids can't sit for 90 minutes. So they do a lot of project-based learning. They do a lot of, like, we'll do 20 minutes of talking and then 20 minutes of exploring or getting up and moving and that kind of stuff. So that, the middle school that I used to work at just started that 4 years ago, but I think they've had way more pros than cons. There's a pro and a con to everything, but I would say overall it's been better.
Can I ask a question
sure.
about middle school?
Yeah.
So my son is in 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a boy and she has a girl. They're in the same class. He's having a problem. He's still a very concrete thinker,
yep.
And they're required to do, like, abstract thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you learned about simile and metaphor. Okay,
yep.
There's
and
this
inferencing.
Passage. Use simile, where's the metaphor in this
mm-hmm.
in this passage, etc. And it's like, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
I know what simile, I know what metaphor is, but I can't find it here. I don't
right.
know what to do, Mom. So.
Well, a lot of times, especially in English, there are power strategies that the teachers can use. And
mm-hmm.
so if you haven't already talked to the teacher about that, that would be one of my first calls, just to say, hey, my child is a very concrete thinker, so these abstract terms, abstract parts of poetry or whatever, are really difficult for him to navigate. A lot of times they can give kids power strategies or mnemonic devices to try to find things. It's like every specialty area has little tricks of the trade. And so it won't be a perfect system because until your child's development actually becomes, it allows him to be more abstract, it will still probably be a struggle. But I would say the teachers in the content areas are really the experts in how to handle those things.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a bigger problem, maybe that translates into other parts of the educational day. then it's probably worth calling the counselor and just saying, hey, something else may be going on, you know, like, are there learning difficulties or disabilities or those kinds of things?
He does have ADHD and learning disability.
Yep, and so then probably reading comprehension, reading fluency, all those types of things that go along with reading poetry or non-fiction text can be really challenging for those kids. So
thank you.
Hang in there, Mama.
I've got one more question.
Yeah.
So you said that your school's had a transitional team or time or something.
Yes.
People that were addressed solely on that. Well, how do we, like, just call the school and ask how they're working with that?
Really, everyone in the sixth grade and all of the administrators and everyone are part of the transition team. And so those are the people usually that run the parent nights and the, like, if they have a basketball game where they invite all the fifth graders to or something, you know, those things where they get them involved. That's who you would start with. I would just start with an administrator if you have a good relationship with anyone in the building. Just say, who is the best person to contact?
And just a big umbrella over that sixth grade stuff was really just teaching your kids that, hey, everyone's going in there, they're trying to figure out who you are, but as a believer, you know who you are. This is who God says you are. And when you walk in, then you can see what you're seeing in a different way. You're like, oh, she's just trying to figure out who she is. He's just trying to figure out who she is. It just gives you a place, a solid foundation when you're going into such chaos of, you know, helping our kids understand this is who you are, you know, because that's what these kids are doing. They're trying to figure it out. So did you have a question, Joanne? Sorry.
Yes, because you've mentioned executive function a few times, and we've actually run into that even in, like, third grade.
Oh, yeah,
for
sure.
Where all of a sudden they're expected to, like, keep track of more things.
Yep.
But I'm like, you didn't really teach them how to do
exactly.
that. Exactly. My kid doesn't do it naturally.
It's a lot of hidden curriculum, really, the executive skills.
So, like, when does that actually develop?
That's part of the frontal lobe that doesn't really fully develop until 21 to 25.
That's what I thought.
So, yeah.
I don't still have it, and I'm 40, so.
Medicine. No, these are the things where if you have, the thing is, we're always gifted with children who are very different from ourselves, and so we're trying to raise these people that I'm like, I don't understand what you're doing. I don't know. I can't even help you. But, like, if you have strategies that you use, like color coding or using an accordion folder or any kind of thing that you can think of that might help your child, think outside the box. You know, a lot of schools will give kids their Go folder or their homework folder or whatever, and so that typically is helpful at least through second or third grade. But as they start to accumulate more and more papers that they have to file away, they have to learn the filing system, they have to keep all these things in their brain, maybe getting them an assignment notebook early on, because I don't think most elementaries give them one.
Ours do.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Maybe an A.
Yeah. Wellsburg.
Yeah, representing.
Yeah, they start them in first or second grade, and it's pretty awesome.
It is.
The idea is they're like, we're doing this for middle school.
That's right. You plan with the end in mind. So, I'm sorry, I'm at time, and I haven't even gotten to high school.
Okay,
my mammogram can wait.
That's not fun anymore.
I know, right? I'm dreading it. Okay, there were a couple of other things that I wanted to make sure. Okay, so this, I can't leave here without saying this. Middle school is when I see kids take over a reign of tyranny, which means that they become the ones who wear the pants in the family. And a lot of times, this is when people succumb to their phone demands and to their whatever demands. Because honestly, I remember thinking, how is this 3-year-old, 44-pound child bringing me to my knees every day and it doesn't get any better, you know? Some people have really sweet little kids and they get really rough middle schoolers. I happen to have the really rough little kids and I don't know if they're ever going to get easy, but I feel like you instill boundaries, and you are the parent, and you are the one that sets limits, and you don't be afraid to do that. Because honestly, a lot of parents want to be a friend to their child, but that is not going to help them in the long run. That's not going to help them function in college autonomously. And so I just want you to keep that in the back of your mind. And when you see other mamas struggling with that, don't judge them, but help them. Because kids have this way of becoming very persuasive with their manipulative tactics. And sometimes we give in just because we don't want to listen to it anymore, you know? It's like, I cannot listen to you talk about your phone one more time, or your lack of a phone. And so, I don't know, I think that's just one really good thing to keep in mind, is that your kids are going to feel like they're the only ones in the world that don't have this, that, or the other thing, but you're doing it for a purpose. Explain that purpose to them. My entire school counseling practice revolves around a model called collaborative problem solving, because when your kids are really age 12 and on, they deserve a voice in your decision. So if you're going to make a decision about them, they probably deserve to have some say in it. They don't get to have all the say, but if you want buy-in, bring them in on the conversation, like, hey, you know, there's this research that's telling us that maybe 15 is the better time to wait for you to get a phone. I keep hearing you say that you want a phone, but I'm doing this to protect you. What are some things that we can do to help you get through this time until you're 15? What would help you if I allowed you to use my phone to text your friends? Or whatever you're willing to compromise, because compromise isn't a bad thing as long as you're okay with it and it doesn't break your family rules or value system, okay? So I'm a big fan of bringing kids in on those types of decisions that involve them. And a little dose of failure doesn't kill any kid, okay? I see a lot of parents who, with really good intentions, try to protect their kids from every single harmful thing in the world, but they learn mistakes are really mentors, and they teach kids so much about how to navigate the world. When you mess up, you fess up, and then you just move on, and you don't make that mistake anymore. But when we protect them from things, and it could be little things, like, I just don't want you to feel pain. I don't want you to feel like that teacher doesn't like you. I'll go to bat for you. We actually disable our children by doing that for them. They didn't have to solve any part of that problem. Their behavior is what probably caused that rift with the teacher. They are the one that needs to be emboldened or empowered to fix that problem. Sixth graders, maybe, they need help. They need an advocate. But when we teach our kids self-advocacy, we also teach them how to fix their problems, how to fix their mess-ups. And we want them to mess up while they're under our roofs so that they can have a little bit of a safer journey through adulthood. So please don't protect your kids from every pain in the world. Of course, they're no-brainers. Don't have guns available to them. Don't have things that they could legitimately hurt themselves or someone else with. But when it comes to the small failures in life, not making a sports team, not getting accepted onto the ambassadors or whatever it is, you know, like
doing their science project.
Yes. They sometimes if they get a C, maybe they didn't do all the work they should have done, they got a C. Let them sit with that. There may be times where you feel righteous indignation and you're like, that is absolutely not appropriate, and you may need to talk to them. See if your kid can do it first, and if your kid's not willing to do it, then maybe you can step in and help or coach them on how to do it. But just I think especially as moms, we want to kind of pave the way. There's actually this new phrase, you've heard of helicopter parents, now there's lawnmower parents who pave the way in front of their child so their child never has to experience any obstacle or stress.
Snowblower parents.
Yeah, yeah, snowblower so parents, exactly. You know, if you're in Alaska or Russia, snowblower parents. So anyway, we just want to keep that in mind. It's okay for kids to experience a little bit of pain or a little bit of failure or a little bit of...
Well, and they're tempting us by all the emails. Text your kids great. Text your kids grades. And I think we had a speaker that said, "Quit checking your kids' grades." Like, so would you be an advocate of them? They're in charge of their grades, and let them share it with us.
How do teachers react to that when, like, you get a message from a teacher like, "Hey, your kid has a D."
Well, now, it became your problem. When a teacher, you know, that's what I always said.
Right.
This is your problem until someone calls me.
I'm actually
probably going to wait until it's a big problem.
I'm a big fan of student-led conferencing, and so I encourage, if your kid is self-directed and motivated and smart and everything comes easily to them, yay for you. The rest of us over here at this table. I encourage families to have Sunday night conferences with their kids, and it's just like, okay, show me your grades. Show me if you have NHIs, which are not handed ins, or things that are missing. Show me what's going on. It's all on them. You know, they have to tell you exactly what's going on, and they need to prepare before they come to meet with you, because you don't want them, like, clicking through trying to find things out. That's their responsibility. They know that they're being held accountable. But for some of you, you probably never have to look at your kids' grades anyway, and they're just, like, straight-A kids, and, you know, you should probably be leading this conference, not me. this talk. Anyway. But I feel like sometimes teachers will get frustrated because parents will come to them when it's almost too late and say, how did I not know my kid had a D? And then the teacher's like, well, we have Power School, and we have this, and we have Canvas, and we have that, and the other thing. And
this
so
this is exactly
there
what
is...
happened in my email exchange this week.
Yes.
She was like,
yes.
Well, because I was like, would have been nice if it was a D. She's like, well, it's on Power School. I'm like, well, I don't really check that. And she's like, well, it's there for you to check. And I'm like, well, but he's in eighth grade.
It's hard.
And so, like, I don't want to see, and this is about me, like, I don't want them to think I don't want the teachers to think I don't care.
Right?
But I also want him to, I'm like, okay, well, then give him the D.
Yep.
Then he'll
right.
have to
that's
take
right.
that.
That's the natural consequence.
It,
right.
And then
he
hopefully,
can
when
that,
he's
like,
next year,
grade,
he's in ninth grade, he's going to be like, I'm not going to do D.
Yeah. Because you know what? In just 3 years, he's going to be driving a car.
Right.
In 5 years, he's going to be voting for, you know,
right.
elected officials. And then when he's 25, he can actually rent a car himself. So, like, you want to prepare them for the next things. This
right.
is what happens in the real world if you don't
right.
check your own grades.
So
if
you just
you...
tell, say that to
no.
I just feel like, like
you as a mom have to maintain that relationship with the teacher. This is part of your tribe. So, you know, you can be like, this is on my kid.
Yeah.
Unless you feel like there's some egregious error or something, and
nope.
you feel like there's a dialogue needed.
Nope, there's not. He's just not
yeah.
doing his work.
And the kids have access a lot of times
yeah.
to their own grades as well.
Yeah,
so again, if you have to set this rule clearly for your kids.
Right.
Like, I expect you to be in charge of your grades, in charge of all of your report cards and that kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff. If they don't know it, then they're not going to check it. But again, if you set this tone, then they will check. Sometimes they might forget.
We
but.
Checked in sixth grade, and in seventh grade, we were like, we would check every now and then.
Yeah.
He knew, and that was the plan. Then, and we're at the summer, we gave him, you know, we're like, okay, you have a phone now, and it's all on you.
Yeah.
Good luck.
I'm a big fan of that.
But the teachers are not.
Because, like, eighth grade is good because
it doesn't matter. The grades don't matter.
The consequence is he has to take it again. Right? That's what we're saying.
No, I don't think she wants to let him take it again. But she's mad at me for not checking his grades and not being aware that
but is there consequences from I mean do you think
Amy's
saying
is there consequences
or do parents
just
from grades or that's okay
oh yeah teachers
no
yeah.
there's
yeah.
usually
so,
parents have varying degrees of
yes.
consequences and in the middle schools there are a lot of retakes. I don't know if that's true for all middle
oh, yeah.
schools but
or,
at the high school we're less likely to give kids retakes
yeah.
or they have to really work their butt off to get one retake.
Well,
a semester.
I told her I was like, don't give him a retake because he needs to feel the weight of that D.
That's right.
And she was like, well, you should have been aware. And I'm like, but I won't.
And you know what? Now you can say, there's 4 weeks left of school.
Yeah.
We will try to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if you've given him that responsibility, then it's up to him.
Yeah.
Corey, what were you going to say?
Yeah.
Well, just in my real life, I am a teacher
in
middle school. fifth and sixth graders. So just not to defend that teacher, but she probably has gotten her hands smacked by so many parents
yeah,
the other way,
true.
Saying, why didn't you tell me? You know, so I think it's great that you're putting it on your child, but they're the ones that are checking. And as a teacher, I would love for you to say, it's on him, you
yeah,
know, especially
okay.
at that eighth grade level. So I
yeah.
think you're doing what you need to be
okay.
doing. But just from the other perspective, I don't know how many times I've gotten
yeah,
sidetracked.
Yeah, that's true.
When, that's how I communicate. You know, I put so
yeah.
much out there,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
hard on the other end when you feel like
for
you're
sure.
getting... Yeah, like, well, why didn't you tell me? And
yeah.
you're like, I did.
Yeah,
you know.
It is. And
so.
Especially, like, if that's one of your first communications with that teacher, you,
and
I think
like
you always want to give the benefit of the doubt and just say,
yeah.
I'm so sorry, we didn't realize that this was what was
right.
going on. We support you in whatever you're going to do.
Yeah, that's what
that parents sometimes, I think that they see the grade and they freak out, parent freak out, and then they snap at the teacher, and then it just turns into this kind of bitter relationship, but it doesn't have to because really we should all be on the same team. We're all in this for your child or, you know, for this class of kids. Okay, sorry. I will hurry. Okay.
I think she should just come back.
Yeah, I mean, I still got 50 pages here. So when you think about high school, a lot of what I've already said is true as well. Get them in the building as much as you can. Show them around. And honestly, at Carmel High School, we are constantly like, we have this event, that event.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get kids in. We do all kinds of events the week before school starts so that they can learn their way around, navigate our building, that kind of stuff. But this is where the rubber hits the road academically. I came over 4 years ago with a group of freshmen, and we were all like deer in headlights for the first 2 weeks, like, what just happened? And so I'd walk around my eighth grade, you doing okay? No, me either. Okay, bye. So this is where, like, in middle schools, again, they're doing lots of project-based learning, lots of great things in the classroom, really engaging. We are, like, a lot of high schools are preparing kids to be
college
ready. And so they're doing a lot of sit and get where you're taking notes for 50, 60 minutes sometimes on really hard things like biology, which you can't see with the naked eye unless you have a microscope and these kinds of things that are very difficult to comprehend. And so my biggest word of encouragement to you is to make sure that you feel comfortable with their ability to take notes and to manage homework. Because a lot of kids go from having 30 minutes or less of homework a night in middle school to
5 hours.
90 minutes to 3 hours easily.
5 hours.
Easily.
Minimum.
Overachiever.
Yeah. And that's just with regular courses. That's not even like with honors and AP and all that other stuff. And so a lot of times parents, especially of kids who are maybe stronger academically, they're like, oh, they'll be fine in honors biology and honors English and honors geometry and honors world history. And I'm like, no, they won't. They're going to die. Please don't do that. So as you go to high school, also you want to ramp up gradually. And so you really the
just because you can take all the AP classes.
Honey,
you should.
This is, and this is our last chance to be a kid, right? I can't tell you how many times I say that in my office. This is your last chance to be a kid. When I was 14, I was not worried about taking honors biology. Let me tell you, I barely made it through regular biology. But ramp up rigor gradually. They don't have to do everything at once. A lot of people, especially in Hamilton County, feel like if you're not taking honors this and AP that, you will not get into any college. Well, that's not true. You can get an academic honors diploma without ever taking one honors course or an AP class. You can do dual credits. You can do IB classes. There are all these other things that you can do and have fun. Kids take AP Human Geography just to get a fully weighted class on their schedule. And I'm like, you see yourself going into law or being like a social studies professor? And they're like, no, I want to be a nurse. And I'm like, why are you taking this then? So don't just let kids take, if you see a career like pathway in a class, then if that's a rigorous class, then great. But don't encourage your kids to just take all these AP classes just to beef up their GPA. Because that only works if they get an A in that fully weighted class. And I promise they're going to have 3 hours of homework a night. Exactly. And a lot of times people are like, oh, but it'll save me money on the back end when we go to college.
No.
Honey, it won't.
Still taking summer school. I'm like, what did we do with all the AP classes? And he's still in summer school.
You could have, I've had kids graduate.
Because unless they know what they want to do.
That's right.
You know?
That's
right.
And let's say you want to go into nursing. Your AP human class isn't going to count for any of your nursing classes.
Yeah.
So I've had kids graduate with 30 college credits and still be first semester sophomores who have four full years ahead of them.
Yeah.
So don't necessarily, like, do your research, make sure you, whatever. And then the last thing I want to talk about is, like, the psychosocial part of high school. And then I promise I'll be done. But this is a time where everything is amped up and elevated. We've got hormones. You can practically see the hormones floating above their heads in the halls. Their bodies are becoming adult-like. Their smells are also becoming adult-like. But it is amazing to me to see the relationships that are budding, especially right now. Like, kids are starting to come out of the woodwork. I'm like, are you holding hands?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know,
we went to prom together. It must be true love.
I know, yeah. I talked to zero of my prom dates.
Yeah.
So, and those are the things that, like, we need to protect our kids in a big way. So I remember when I was in high school, we had this motivational speaker who came and talked to us. And one thing she said to me that has stuck with me my entire life is that at any point in time, I can become like those who are having sex. But at no point in time can I go back to not be having sex or to being a virgin, which you would regret for your entire life, you know. So, and it's the same thing with the phones. It's the same thing with anything that you're struggling with. At any point in time, you can acquiesce and give in to those things, but you can't go back. Once you've passed a certain point, you can't go back. And so my husband and I often, we went to a Christian college, and we often talk about, like, the pressures that kids face, especially sexually. And it's happening with kids who you wouldn't expect to be having sex. I mean, it's like, it's very pervasive.
Nerds totally have
and
sex.
They, nerds are totally, no. Yeah. The band kids, totally doing it.
Yeah.
Everyone, I mean, it's like, it's everywhere. And social media doesn't help with that. They have hookups. They have ways that they connect just in very adult ways that they shouldn't be or that they're not ready for. But not everybody is, you know, and so those parents that have the open communication, that they don't have parental freakouts, that they have all the kids hanging out at their houses, those are the parents that they're guiding their kids to stay abstinent or to make wiser choices, to not drink, to not go to parties. And so even if you feel at sometimes like you're maybe in the minority with that, it's okay. Be the minority. Be happy with it. Rock that minority situation like a boss. And invite those kids to your home. Let them see what it's like to have a wholesome family, to, you know, to not have to have sex on the weekends because you could be playing Monopoly instead.
It's fun.
It is so fun.
It lasts
Monopoly
way
deal.
Longer.
just love your kids. Love them fiercely. Protect them. Yeah.
Well, go ahead and finish.
No, I'm not. I was just rambling at that point.
So if I had a fraction of your knowledge, I would be a better teacher and a better mom. And I'm not going to put you on the spot. Maybe think about it and then connect with Mary Ann Miller.
Sure.
But, if you could give us like books that you've read or websites that
yes.
we can go to digger.
We can
yeah.
choose to follow.
I have books about all this stuff, like executive skills and about sex.
Yeah, we need that list.
Okay. I have this website. I will.
And like the list of questions that you would ask that are
to be a better interviewer.